From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Barbara Caritti, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, September 1st, 2016. And on this day, Democratic and Republican legislative leaders meet to discuss possible actions against Governor Paul LePage in the wake of the uproar over his obscenity-laced voicemail. Why are some Maine residential electricity consumers seeing their bills skyrocket? We take a look. And a new state program that aims to help families of young children with autism is already struggling. Those stories and more after this. This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and Kennebec Valley Community College, offering a late start semester beginning September 26th, kvcc.me.edu. I'm Barbara Caritti. Democratic and Republican leaders in the Maine legislature met for about an hour late this afternoon to discuss what to do about Governor Paul LePage. But after the meeting, they continued to disagree over punishing LePage for leaving a threatening and profanity-laced voicemail for a Democratic state lawmaker. Steve Missler has more.
For Democrats, the issue is simple. LePage should either resign or be impeached. For Republicans, it's complicated. Some Republicans support censuring LePage, while others believe his apology is enough. Today, a private meeting between leaders in both parties did not change that dynamic, but a disagreement over the procedure to determine whether lawmakers should reconvene for a special session will likely prolong the controversy. Republican House Leader Kenneth Fredette said his caucus will not vote for a special session, but Republican Senate President Michael Thibodeau believes some members of his caucus want to take action against LePage, although not necessarily impeachment. Democrats believe they're in the driver's seat. They believe the public backlash to LePage's actions favors their call for his ouster and in the upcoming legislative elections. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
We'll keep you updated on the story on our website, mpbn.net, and on tomorrow's morning edition on Maine Public Radio. Meanwhile, prospects have dimmed for a major new natural gas pipeline to serve New England after a Massachusetts court ruled that consumers there could not be required to pay for it. Now, a Boston-based group is proposing to relieve winter gas shortages in Maine by building a liquefaction and storage facility that could hold millions of gallons of liquefied natural gas and billing Maine consumers for the cost. Fred Bever reports.
The business model goes like this. Big natural gas users, mills, hospitals, electricity generators, would buy a lot of natural gas in the summer when prices are low. The gas would be super cooled and liquefied, stored in an insulated tank, and drawn down on the cold winter days when gas prices can skyrocket.
So it's their gas, and then when they direct the facility to release it, it'll be released, and they'll be able to utilize that gas at the lower price and not the peak demand prices.
James Cody, a spokesman for developer Maine Energy Storage, says the facility would be located either in Brewer or Rumford, and the projected $250 million project cost would be billed to gas and electricity consumers in Maine. But Cody says the added storage capacity would help put the brakes on wintertime gas price spikes, and that could benefit all Maine gas or electricity users. But overall public benefit is a basic determination state utility regulators will need to make before the project is given a green light. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And if your electric bill has shot up from one month to another, you're not alone. In a piece in today's Bangor Daily News, business reporter Darren Fischel looks at this phenomenon. The staff at the paper also crunched the numbers and found that electricity customers in Maine spent $18 million more by using competitive providers than they would have if they just stuck with the standard rate. This after the providers promised savings over that rate. Nora Flaherty asked Fischel to tell the story of one couple in Charleston featured in the piece.
They weren't actually shopping for electricity at all. They had called about internet service and got marketed an electricity offering and took it. They signed up for a year, and after the year contract ended, the price got jacked up. It was a variable rate, which changed every month after they had their initial year contract.
So what did they see on their bill? What made them start to be concerned about this?
The bill tripled, and they were wondering why. And they obviously started looking around at what they were doing in their own house that might be causing them to use so much more electricity. Was there something running at night that they didn't know about or something like that? They bought a new water heater, and that wasn't the problem. It was that the price that they were actually paying for each unit of electricity had gone up.
How common a story has this been in Maine over the last few years?
We know that as a whole, the group of customers that bought from competitive suppliers, competitive electricity providers, have as a whole paid more than if they had been, they've paid more than if they've been on the standard offer.
You have done some research on this, your paper has, and you have some graphs and charts that show this information. How much money have customers as a whole lost?
I like to look at it from 2012. That's really when residential customers started. And from 2012 to 2014, it was $18 million more. There was initial savings, which tells part of the story too. In 2012, it was about $2.8 million that those customers saved. But in the later years, that changed in 2013 and 2014. The data for 2015 will be final in October, but preliminary data that the Energy Information Administration put out, it seems that 2015 is the same story, if not worse.
Walk me through the process in a nutshell of how this has happened.
Electricity costs have been a general concern, and New England has some of the highest, but residential customers, it's difficult when you talk about energy prices because typically the discussion is around wholesale prices, which is the market that residential customers don't really see. Part of the idea is that if you have all these companies taking in all this information about the wholesale market and what's going on in it, that all of them will come up with a good offer, that competition will lead to these providers offering better prices and managing that wholesale market more ably on behalf of their customers, which are now residential customers.
One promise of competition when it came in was that these new energy providers would lower their prices through innovation. In theory, that presumably means exploring renewables and different energy sources that could lower prices. But in practice, what has it actually meant?
For the period we looked at, which I think is important, 2012 to 2014, it hasn't meant much. There's one company that offers a renewable plan, but the rate fluctuates every month, and it's generally higher. By and large, it seems they're getting the same basic mix of electricity supply.
In practice, a lot of the innovation that has happened, you say, in your piece, is actually in how companies market to customers.
That has been a primary innovation. The business thrives on acquiring customers and building a customer base. Electricity Maine's history was building the largest customer base in the state, and they've sold that to another company.
Okay, so it seems like while this has brought a little light to this subject, the takeaway might be that it's incredibly confusing. What can we as consumers do if we feel that, you know, we're perhaps in a situation where we're paying significantly more for energy than we ought to be?
Key thing is to find out who is providing your electricity supply. The best place to call is the utility, and they'll know if you're getting your electricity supply from the standard offer or from another company. But that's all. The utility would be able to help suss that out.
All right. Darren Fischel is a business and economy writer for the BDN. Thanks a lot, Darren.
Thank you.
And that was Nora Flaherty talking with Bangor Daily News business reporter Darren Fischel. You can read his piece and see how the publication arrived at its numbers on our website, mpbn.net. Meanwhile, the State Ethics Board has decided that Mainers who throw campaign house parties should face stricter disclosure rules. The decision comes after complaints were raised over whether a large batch of invitations announcing a Portland Democrats' house parties amounted to undisclosed contributions lacking transparency. The Maine Commission on Governmental Ethics and Election Practices yesterday approved a rule that says volunteers for Maine candidates can't spend more than $250 on invitations, food, and beverages per election. The rule also says only volunteers who host house parties on their property can pay for invitations. Robert Howe of Maine Citizens for Clean Elections says the rule clarifies the line between traditional grassroots activities and large-scale campaigns. After a legal review, the amendment will go to the Secretary of State to become effective for November's election. Coming up, a new state program designed to help kids with autism is struggling with high costs and a lack of caregivers. In Lewiston, 140 people are losing their call center jobs. Xerox has announced that the company has decided to close the facility because a contract for services it supports ends on October 31st. Lewiston's Director of Economic and Community Development, Lincoln Jeffers, says the news came as a shock. He says there was no indication that the jobs were in jeopardy, but he says Lewiston has a lot of experience hosting call centers.
So I'm hopeful that these 140 employees already have experience in the industry will be able to relatively quickly be able to find alternative employment.
Xerox officials say they plan to close the Lewiston facility by the end of the year. And Maine's only health insurance co-op will leave the New Hampshire market next year. As Patty White reports, officials with Community Health Options say the exit is intended to help buoy the company after it sustained millions in losses in 2015.
Community Health Options entered the New Hampshire insurance market last year after its initial strong performance in Maine. But as the co-op's members nearly doubled, its claims cost shot up too. By the end of the year, the co-op suffered losses of more than $30 million. CEO Kevin Lewis says he hopes the withdrawal is temporary, but it's the prudent thing to do.
We're leaving New Hampshire as of 2017, really to concentrate our capital in Maine and to continue our effort to strengthen our position here.
The Maine Bureau of Insurance has approved the move and says Community Health Options is so far keeping pace with its plan to regain stability. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Now to a growing issue in Maine. Over the past decade, the number of students diagnosed with autism in the state's public schools has more than doubled. Many of those newly diagnosed kids aren't even old enough to start kindergarten. In response, Maine's Child Development Services has implemented a new program specifically targeted to help the families of young children with autism. But as Robbie Feinberg reports, high costs and few caregivers could put the program at risk.
Three days a week, Chris West enters a small house down a rural winding road in Canaan, just east of Skowhegan, and she transforms it into a unique kind of special education classroom.
You do it.
West is here from the state's Child Development Services to support Michael, a 2-year-old boy who was diagnosed with autism about a year ago. His family didn't want his name used for privacy reasons. Inside Michael's house, West sits on the ground and the two piece together puzzles. They sing songs. West says it's all a way to gently expose Michael to a new social setting, and it's fun.
15 years ago, it was sitting at a table, you know, do this, do this, do this. Where now it's, like I said, it's much more child-led. It's fun. It's fun for me. It's fun for him.
This session is part of a new program called Early Start Maine. It was developed by the state's Child Development Services in partnership with the University of Maine's Autism Institute for Education and Research. The program is based on the Early Start Denver model, which was actually developed in California. Maine adopted it statewide about 18 months ago due to the skyrocketing number of children diagnosed with autism, specifically kids like Michael, who are diagnosed at a very young age.
Kids birth to 3 really need that relationship-based model or play-based model.
Deborah Rooks Ellis is the director of the Maine Autism Institute.
The earlier you catch a child with a need, there's research to back up that they will need less of services later in life. So really important to give that early intervention right off the start.
Brooks Ellis says what's more important is that these kinds of services are being delivered in a child's home, so families won't have to travel to get them. And it also means that a parent can now learn development strategies directly from a provider and use those strategies to help their child 24/7. Roy Fowler is the Early Intervention Technical Advisor for Child Development Services.
So our approach here is to go in and work with the families, the parents, the caregivers, and help them to learn the strategies and help them to find ways to implant those strategies, embed those strategies into their everyday routines so that the intervention is taking place at home.
Michael's mom, Justine, says her son still struggles with lashing out and finding ways to communicate with those around him. But she's already seen the progress he's made after just 9 months.
With doing the ESCM, he just started coming back and playing the games and doing the social routines, and he just started speaking. So those, yeah, like a few weeks ago, that's great.
Roy Fowler with Child Development Services says since the program launched a year and a half ago, the state is already seeing children with autism progress more quickly. But Fowler says the program is also at a crucial tipping point. Maine, he says, is currently short on special education teachers, and it's particularly tough to find enough teachers to work with younger kids.
Because it's very easy to get fried, to get burnt out in this. You're working with one child very intensively for up to 15 hours a week.
The other issue for the program, Fowler says, is cost. Children with autism need a lot of resources.
If you think about it, one full-time person can handle two, maybe three children at a time, on a caseload. So you're paying a person a full-time salary to provide services to three kids.
That salary starts at only around $29,000, but multiply it by 15 or 20 staff members, and suddenly a program serving fewer than 50 children costs $700,000 or $800,000. Fowler says CDS can pay that. The issue, though, is that the agency has more than 1,200 other students that it has to serve, too. More services to these kids means fewer resources for others.
We're really looking at how do we make this sustainable? And the big question there is the funding.
But Fowler says there may be a solution. CDS is about to begin billing Early Start Maine services to MaineCare, the state's version of Medicaid. That would shift these costs from the Department of Education to the Department of Health and Human Services.
If MaineCare will pay for ESDM, I think we have a future. I think it could be sustainable and we could even scale it up a bit.
But will MaineCare pay? Fowler is optimistic, as are officials at DHHS. Spokesman Samantha Edwards says it's MaineCare's obligation to cover specific support services for young people with developmental disabilities, and Early Start Maine falls into that category. Fowler says if the shift to MaineCare works out and the state can find enough caregivers, Early Start Maine could be a long-term solution for many young kids with autism and their families. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And finally, here's meteorologist Paul Cousins with the forecast.
The atmosphere continues to dry out throughout the Northeast as we approach the long holiday weekend. Tonight, skies become partly cloudy over northern Maine with complete clearing for the remainder of the state. 50s for all. Very comfortable. A ribbon of high clouds will drift south across Maine tomorrow, yet plenty of blue sky will be enjoyed either side of it. Seasonable for a change, 67 north to 76 south. Other than a touch of cloudiness across the crown of Maine Saturday, we'll benefit from full sunshine, 70 statewide with cooling afternoon sea breezes. High pressure will provide dazzling sun for much of the state Sunday. Clouds may encroach upon the southernmost counties in the afternoon. Highs around 80, cooler along the coast. Labor Day, well, the behavior of Hermine will determine our weather entree. Certainly brightest north, showers seem more likely south, and temperatures will cool a touch. 60s south, 70s central and north. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public Broadcasting.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, September 1st, 2016. Our theme music was composed by Robert Holt. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to Steve Missler, Mal Leary, Fred Bever, Patty White, Robbie Feinberg, Ed Morin, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We welcome your comments. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mpbn.net. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at Maine Public Broadcasting, thanks for listening.